The possibility of life after death is one of the oldest hopes in the world. British novelist Jim Crace would tell you it's nothing more than wishful thinking. Crace is an atheist, and his fiction reflects his beliefs. Take this passage from his novel, Being Dead.
Should we expect their spirits to depart, some hellish cart and its pale horse to come and take their falling souls away to its hot mines, some godly decorated messenger, too simple-minded for its golden wings, to fly them to repose, reunion, eternity? Might we demand some ghosts at least, or fanfares, gardens and high gates, or some dramatic skyline steep with clouds? The plain and unforgiving facts were these. Solis and Joseph were soft fruit. They lived in tender bodies. They were vulnerable. They did not have the power not to die. They were, we are, all flesh, and then we are all meat.
Critics call Jim Crace's novel Being Dead brilliant. It's the story of Joseph and Solis, two characters who've been married for 30 years and are, when the book opens, dead. Many readers found the book shocking, even profane, but Crace himself says his aim was to comfort.
What I wanted to do, I think, was to have a sort of a quest for a new kind of grief. And the kind of grief I was looking for wasn't going to be the kind of grief that pretended that when people die, that there's a future for them. You know, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in a future after death. We will not be in eternity forever eating honey and yogurt. And therefore, what I was looking for was a narrative of comfort which looked back to the past, in which we would take our comfort from the life lived, not the eternity that was ahead. So what I wanted to do in order to achieve that was to have a different view of death from that the Christian and the other religions provide. And one of the important things, it seemed to me, was we had to face up to the cruelty and the obscenity and the ugliness of death. And we understand what that's like when we go for a country walk and we see dead creatures laying on the ground, but we sort of pretend that it's different for us, that somehow or other when we die, if you dig us up in 30 years' time, that our hair is still going to be combed, you know, and we're still going to have buttoned shirts and nice pink or brown faces or whatever it was we started off with. Whereas we know that when we're walking along the lake shore and we find a dead seagull and we turn it over with the end of our foot, we don't feel that that's meretricious. We recognise that that bird, which is now tumbling with maggots maybe and has its ribs grinning through the feathers, we knew that it has flown and now it has dropped from the sky. And I feel that what I wanted to do was to treat the human corpses in this book as if they were dead seagulls so that we could see what physical death was like. And then go on to point out the big difference between humankind and seagulls, and that is that we have the ability to love and the ability to experience life in a way that other creatures don't.
I think, if I understand what you're saying, when you look at the seagull, it's not a horrifying experience, partly because there is no past to the seagull other than that it was yet another one that flew. The horror in thinking about humans in that sense is that we know what lives they've lived. And you're flipping that on its head and saying that actually that's what takes the horror away from what happens to our bodies, is that we have lived and loved.
Well, we have consciousness. That's the difference between us and the seagulls, is that we have consciousness. And the consciousness enables us to project into, at the end of our lives, the notion of death, and to, at the time of death, to project back the lives that we've lived. So we have a much greater, firmer control over our short span on this planet than a seagull does or a fox does or a badger does or what have you. But it seems to me that equally we shouldn't, if we have this enhanced consciousness, why do we bother to tell lies about the facts of death and that death is final? I mean, I was looking for a version of death in a godless universe, because it seems to me that the narratives of treating with death that we've always had to revert to in the past have always been God-based narratives. They've been religious narratives.
The hope that they provide is not actually related to the people involved, is it?
It's a kind of a whole edifice of and tissue of dishonesty, I think, very often.
Well, you've been but, anything
but... Well, I have to say that even though the narratives might be false, you know, even though it is not true when the vicar says that you're going to paradise or death is nothing, he has merely gone into another room, even though that those narratives are false, I think the comfort is real. And there's no question that people who have religious belief do find genuine comfort in the face of death from the narratives that are being told. I think atheists like myself have to recognise that there are certain things that religions have got that we would benefit from, such as a sense of transcendence and a sense of spirituality and the ability perhaps to accept mysticism in life. And as I talk, you hear that all the words I'm using to describe that are words stolen from religion because, yes, you know, mysticism, spirituality, we don't have those words in atheism. But maybe it's time that we did.
How does an atheist go about acquiring mysticism? I mean, is there a practical, can you offer a 1-2-3 for an atheist to begin to approach mysticism?
Well, I can explain why it makes sense, because even though there is no God, and I say that without embarrassment, I used to creep around for years saying I was embarrassedly in front of Christians saying and Jews and Muslims saying that I was an agnostic. But now, actually, I've come out. I am an atheist, and I'm going to say so. But even though there is no God, the things that make people believe in gods do exist. Death is fearsome. The world is awesomely wonderful. It is great to be here for our 70 years. And so all the occasion is there for us to feel a sense of transcendence and to require transcendence. It's just that there is no God. So for us atheists, it's quite simple. When I go and see something fearful or beautiful, my sense of fear and beauty is no less than a minister of the church is. Why should it be? The world is just as wonderful for us as it is for him. Equally, the need for me to live a life which is governed by a cultural sense of good and evil, and also by a personal sense of good and evil, is just as essential for me as it is for him. Because if it wasn't like that, then, you know, all the Christians and all the Jews and all the Muslims would be perfect people and they would be sinless. And if you wanted to do away with rape and pillage and murder and theft, all you would have to do is to go around with a big white van and round up all the atheists, which is a nice thought, isn't it? But of course, we know it's not like that. We know that sin and virtue aren't associated with religion or lack of religion. It's somehow separate. So actually, I resist the idea that it is only people who believe in God who can respond to the spirituality of this universe that we inhabit for that short time.
Jim Crace is the author of several novels, including Quarantine, Being Dead, and Genesis.